A nation struggling to recover from nearly three decades of conflict and anarchy. A government striving to rebuild basic infrastructures and establish trust amongst former warring parties. A people hoping against all odds that a new era of peace and prosperity is finally on the way. Welcome to Afghanistan Today, a country which still makes news headlines with suicide bombings, hostage takings, and an ongoing refugee crisis. Yet further away from the media spotlight, it's also a nation where international aid is helping to rebuild essential services, where small businesses are beginning to thrive, and where people are at last starting to see a brighter future for their children.
As we were driving out of Herat again, when we were driving out along the dusty roads there, you could see the children going to school, a mix of young girls as much as young boys. This is a key step, and it was very symbolic to see that this was beginning to happen again.
My colleague Paul Antham has recently returned from a visit to the Afghan capital Kabul and to the central regions of Bamyan and Herat. He was travelling with a team from the UN's Rome-based Food and Agriculture Organization, or FAO, to find out more about two projects to improve seed production for local farmers and to build a sustainable seed policy at national level. Despite the devastation of so many years of civil war, Paul found that such projects really are beginning to help local communities get back on their feet again.
That's right. I mean, obviously, years of war and anarchy have wreaked havoc, basically, with the Afghan civil service. Looters have stripped government laboratories and offices of equipment and records. The public sector ceased to perform its proper function of introducing proper crops, particularly the staple wheat that suffered, but also rice and maize and vegetables. Now, the European Union has financed two FAO projects. The first one is to improve the seed production and then to build a national industry with a seed policy, seed law and proper bodies so that the people are actually getting proper seeds so they can grow better crops and then be able to export crops, be able to make more money and be able to, of course, feed their own families. Now, what they're trying to do is set up small entrepreneurial businesses using local villagers to actually run those businesses. Now, one of the founders of these businesses that we met was Abdul Qadir, and he was a typical example. He was a village farmer turned entrepreneur and director of a small seed enterprise. Now, he worked with 18 other villagers who are all founding shareholders in a small business, a small private seed company. And their product is improved quality wheat and vegetable seed. And that's been in great demand amongst the local villagers. So the whole aim of the projects is to encourage local villagers to set up their own businesses, to give them the means to do this, so that they then have the means to sell the seed to the farmers themselves, and then they become self-sufficient, so that when these projects end and when FAO and the other organisations leave Afghanistan, we have a thriving private sector, and that private sector is able to sustain the agriculture industry, not just revitalise it now, but sustain it well into the future.
Paul and the FAO team spoke with farmers in remote villages, several of whom had seen their homes and livelihoods destroyed, first by Soviet troops fighting the Mujahideen militants, then later by the Taliban's rule of terror and violence. Now, however, they're reaping the benefits of these new projects to boost seed production and revive the agricultural sector, one of the keys to improving Afghanistan's struggling economy.
Yes, let me tell you about one wheat grower that we met called Abdul Hamid. Abdul had been provided with a batch of seed initially, his initial part of the project, to see how this seed would grow. Now, the results for him were significant. He enjoyed almost a doubling of the yield of wheat that he had. And with the extra money, he was able to buy extra fruit, extra vegetables. He was also able to bake better bread, which was tastier. And he was also able to buy products such as rice, which obviously is important to farmers like Abdul because it stores better during the winter.
So he said, now we are getting more foods. Before, we were traditional where we were eating some sort of food that were local. We were not, for example, eating rice. Now we are selling this, we are bringing rice, we are bringing other food that we use it. Before, we were not using these kind of foods.
These agricultural developments also have a direct impact on Abdul's wife and seven children, who can enjoy a healthier and more diverse diet. Though the horrors and hardships of the past decades can still be clearly seen in wrecked tanks and trucks, the numbers of landmine victims or the many bereaved families, Paul told me there is a new sense of hope slowly taking root in the country.
There have been improvements since the fall of the Taliban in 2001. For many farmers, there are still problems. There are problems with the land. There are problems, obviously, there's climatic problems as well, ongoing drought, and on occasions there are floods as well. So there are climatic problems as well as the conflict problems. We have to remember there's been 30 years of conflict here, and 30 years often when the roads were blocked, the roads were insecure, vehicles were not able to get through, crops could not be exported. So people were not able to make a lot of money. This has obviously impacted on families who have not been able to get to market, not been able to afford even the kind of foods that they would want. So actually, by making extra money through these better crops, they're able to diversify, as you rightly say, their diet, they're able to get to the market, they're able to get fruit, extra vegetables. It's all about sustainability and being able to maintain this well into the future.
We read in the papers, though, that there's still a real problem with security throughout Afghanistan. Difficulties, fears of kidnappings, fears of attacks on roads, perhaps going to markets and so on. Did you see anything of this during your trip?
The security situation has improved a lot. In the areas that we were in, we did not see a massive security problem. Let me say, in the areas such as Kabul and the capital, if administration level, if I was trying to arrange a meeting, that would need full protection. You would have to have a proper organised protection, proper notice to the appropriate authorities. In terms of actually FAO and the UN trying to do its work, it's quite well accepted. I think it's appreciated in the work that it's trying to do. For people actually trying to get to the markets now, as I say, under the Taliban rule and previous to that, during the Soviet invasion, there was certainly the roads were a lot more difficult to negotiate. A lot of roads were blocked off. Trucks could not get through. People were having to walk maybe 20, 30 kilometres to get to market. We're not seeing those problems now. And in that area, there's definitely been improvement.
Do people still fear that the Taliban may gain ground again? We hear reports of them regrouping, perhaps trying to stage another comeback in some way.
I think people in Afghanistan are quietly optimistic, and I think they are an optimistic people. They're very positive people. They're very positive in terms of if they're given the conditions actually to make a living and to farm their land and to live in peace, then that is something that they embrace. And one of the main things that we found was we could harness that in terms of actually encouraging these people to go into the private industries, to actually try something new, to actually invest money, and also the people to buy seeds directly from the private or from the private enterprises. This was something that people were very, very keen to do because they do have this positive element, this positive outlook, which they've had to have really through 30 years of conflict. They've had to sustain that attitude to be able to sustain themselves, that they've had to be very resilient to a situation where, as I say, the roads were often blocked, often the land could not be farmed. So I would say, One of the technical staff of the government told me that the Afghani people are very prone to change. They'll harness opportunities that they're given. You know, they're growing wheat, for example, but the wheat does not grow so well. So now with this new seed, you can introduce higher quality seed, more disease tolerant seed. And if they're given a chance to try different types of seed and different types of crop even, they'll take it. Yeah, and they'll try something new. And basically, it's not a case of like fearing about the Taliban and what's going to happen. It's being able to make a living, and it's being able to make the most of the conditions that they're in, and then quietly hoping that this is not interrupted by anything further and any other factors outside them.
Those who suffered most under the Taliban, of course, were the women, who were virtually excluded from education, from public life, from any participation in social life as well. How are they doing today? You mentioned a couple of men you met. You also met some of the women, though, didn't you?
We did, and there has been a dramatic improvement in that area. And we actually, under the FAO project, in some of the seed testing laboratories, we actually have some women employed in those areas now who are playing a major part in helping to revive Afghanistan's agriculture. Obviously, under the Taliban regime, the women suffered maybe most of all. We're talking now between about 1996 and 2001. Conditions in which women were forbidden to work, they could not attend the school beyond the age of 8 years, and on cases could not even leave home without a male escort. Now, we interviewed some women in a laboratory in Herat, a seed test laboratory. For example, Nazila Jamshidi, who was a good example. For her, she was like the sole breadwinner in her house. So despite the fact that there might be this cultural concern, there might be cultural pressures, she explained to me that there was nobody else in her house to make money. Her father had died when she was two during conflict. Her mother was ill now and got migraines. And she was the only person who could actually bring in an income. So regardless of what the cultural pressures were, not that she received any cultural pressures herself, but regardless of if there were those kind of pressures, a lot of women have no choice. They have to work.
She says it's very important because what she gets is 150 Afghanis from here. And this can be the food and other expenses for her family.
And how can she spend that money?
She uses this money for the rice, for the oil, and for clothing, and sweets, tea, and this.
Another woman was telling me at the laboratory that there is social pressure from her not necessarily from her family, but from her neighbours, and she senses a general distaste for the fact that she is a woman and she's working, and this may be against some people's beliefs and some people's culture. At the same time, she had to work. She was the only one who's bringing money into that family. She's the only one who can help sustain that family. So it's not a matter of choice. But I found with the majority of women in the Herat area who we spoke to, there was a general acceptance that women were working. Obviously, that's not true in all areas, but I think increasingly, and particularly when we look at like a zone that has had conflict for 30 years, the role of women is going to be very important because they are often left as the only breadwinner or one of the only breadwinners.
Women are, of course, or young girls rather, are going to school again, aren't they? There are hopes that this social status, these pressures that you're talking about, this will change slowly, won't it?
Absolutely. And as we were driving out of Herat again, when we were driving out along the dusty roads there, you could see the children going to school, a mix of young girls as much as young boys. And obviously this was, for me, was like very symbolic in terms of like the problems that Afghanistan has been through and the lack of skills and the lack of training. Because just to be clear, during the conflict, a vast majority of skilled technicians, of skilled engineers, of skilled people in agriculture and in other fields either were forced to flee the country or were killed. Now, that's left a massive gap in skills and knowledge. And the fact is that this is a very worrying sign for Afghanistan. And now we're seeing like a period of retraining, of re-education. Now, that starts with the fact that FAO is in doing these projects and FAO is able to give technical advice to trainees now, for example, in agricultural techniques, in computer use, in use of internet and so on. But it was also symbolised for me that it starts right at the beginning. So when you see these children actually going to school now, getting a basic education, like basic literacy, basic knowledge like this, this is a key step. And it was very symbolic to see that this was beginning to happen again, and as much with girls as with boys.
And my thanks there to Paul Anthem, recently returned from Afghanistan on a field trip organised by the United Nations Rome-based Food and Agriculture Organisation.